and welcome to the October-November issue of Rotary Magazine. My name is Dave King, Managing Editor of the magazine, and I'll be taking you through some of the highlights, including news, features and letters from our members. This month's issue is filled with an array of interesting stories. It's World Polio Day on October the 24th, and to coincide with this key date, we look at the situation in Afghanistan following the Taliban takeover and how that is going to impact on efforts to tackle polio. We've got interviews with key figures within Rotary and the World Health Organization. The Scots Gordon McAnally has been nominated to serve as President of Rotary International from July 2023, and I've been speaking to Gordon about his plans for the year. We will be looking at the work of the Rotary Foundation and the need for legacy giving, and we'll be turning the spotlight on the Rotary Centre, which is hidden in the Peak District near Sheffield, is over 100 years old and claims to be the longest running Rotary project in the world. And so, as you listen to these stories and feel inspired by what you hear, please feel free to share them via your social media networks.
Against polio in a country of chaos. Following the Taliban's sudden takeover of Afghanistan, what hope is there of wiping out polio in one of its last strongholds? Dave King. There can be fewer harrowing images than the sight of tearful Afghan mothers handing over their babies to troops at Kabul airport with shouts of "Save my baby" as they begged British soldiers to save their children from the Taliban. The mothers were desperate. They were getting beaten by the Taliban. They shouted, "Save my baby," and threw the babies at us. Some of the babies fell on the barbed wire, a parachute regiment officer told The Independent. It was awful what happened. By the end of the night, there wasn't one man among us who was not crying, he added quietly. These were among the last of the mercy flights ferrying Afghan citizens eligible for resettlement, just days after the Taliban swept to power following 20 years of war. What remains uncertain is what Afghanistan will be like under Taliban rule, particularly for women, human rights and political freedoms. From a health perspective, with World Polio Day being marked on October the 24th, what impact will this dramatic regime change have on the campaign in Afghanistan and neighbouring Pakistan, the final two outposts for the wild polio virus in the world? Irishman Aidan O'Leary is the new Director for Polio Eradication at the World Health Organization, WHO. Earlier this year, the 56-year-old took over from Frenchman Michel Zaffran, accepting the chalice at the height of the COVID pandemic, which temporarily stalled WHO's efforts to eradicate wild poliovirus. Yet remarkably, the numbers of wild polio cases have dropped dramatically from 140 in 2020 to just two cases this year, one each in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Afghanistan sits on a political knife edge. Even before rebalancing of the political order in Kabul, the WHO has struck an agreement with the Taliban to conduct mask-to-mask polio campaigns in previously inaccessible regions where there has been no contact for almost 2 years. Aidan comes into the job knowing the terrain well. He was chief of polio eradication in Pakistan for UNICEF and head of office in Afghanistan for the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. And he remains resolute that there is a job to be finished in Afghanistan. Poliovirus circulation does not stop during conflicts. It does not stop during emergencies. It does not stop even if a country is descending into chaos. If anything, it makes children and families even more vulnerable to an added layer for risk, he pointed out. Despite risks and challenges due to the recent insecurity, the polio program is staying and delivering for the children of Afghanistan. He said that the WHO's 315 staff and more than 70,000 polio health workers across Afghanistan remained firm in their resolve to eradicate polio. Their work continues to ensure critical polio activities remain functional while adapting to the rapidly changing situation, which carried on even when hostilities were at their worst in the country. That view was shared by John Germ, chair of the Rotary Foundation, who, in highlighting how contacts with the Taliban have been shared for some time, pointed out, "The Taliban have children too, and we want them protected against polio. We acknowledge the tragedy of the situation in Afghanistan, but there have always been obstacles in the way that have been overcome." Rotary International Polio Plus chairman Mike McGovern stated that Rotary's team is working closely with the chairman of the Afghanistan National Polio Plus Committee, Mohammed Ishaq Niazmand. He said, "We need to work with all elements of leadership in that country, and the anti-government element has indicated a willingness to work with us." Historically, the Taliban have never been against polio vaccination. They are wary of people involved in delivering the vaccines, but they want to target the end of polio and are very well organised. As conflict in Afghanistan quickly evolves, we must advocate for the children of Afghanistan. The polio programme must work and communicate with all stakeholders involved to ensure that polio immunisation remains a priority, to ensure the gains we have made against polio do not diminish. We look forward to working with our polio eradication partners and the Afghani people to completely eradicate polio. In 2021, only one wild poliovirus type 1, WPV1, and 43 circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus type 2, CVDPV2, cases have been confirmed in Afghanistan, which is a remarkable figure. All of these cases have been reported in areas of the country which have been inaccessible to door-to-door vaccination campaigns. That has left at least 3 million children repeatedly deprived of polio vaccination. WHO has been in Afghanistan for 7 decades. It has underlined its commitment to stay in the country to build on progress over the past 20 years, including in reducing maternal mortality and child mortality. However, Dr. Luo Dapeng, WHO's representative in Afghanistan, warned that with the current crisis, the population displacement could impact the program's access to children and increase immunity gaps against polio, triggering a rise in transmission. It is feared that the mixing and movement of unvaccinated populations due to the upheaval faced by thousands of Afghans may also cause CVDPV2 outbreaks, he said. We are working with all actors to ensure that there are no delays or disruptions to polio and other routine immunisation campaigns. Gains of the past 20 years cannot be lost. Children need immunisation now. They must not bear the brunt of conflict and instability. We are calling for unimpeded access to all children. While the current situation is a challenge, it is by no means the first which the polio programme has faced. With security quickly deteriorating in August, the polio programme moved swiftly to ensure safety and security of its staff. About 255 polio staff remain at their field locations, remotely supported by colleagues who had to relocate, and they continue to maintain essential polio services. Thanks to their efforts, acute flaccid paralysis and environmental surveillance never stopped. Except for a few locations which experienced temporary disruptions to surveillance activities, stool sample collection, visits to active health facilities, case investigation, the shipment of stool samples to Pakistan for laboratory testing, and the collection of sewage samples for polio environmental surveillance remain unaffected. COVID-19 surveillance, which the polio program has been supporting since last year, has also continued despite the political disruption in Afghanistan. Aidan O'Leary added, "Overcoming the daily challenges posed by the current situation, polio vaccinations are continuing to be administered to children through permanent transit teams in most regions and at cross-border sites, including Friendship Gate between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Discussions are ongoing with local authorities to safeguard the resumption of critical polio supplementary immunisation activities across the country." WHO remains optimistic that the polio vaccination campaigns planned for later this year can go ahead. "We're maintaining flexibility and adapting our plans to the evolving context. The safety and security of staff and polio health workers is our top priority. Their commitment to ending polio is nothing short of inspirational. We stand ready to support their critical work in any way we can." Looking further afield and outside of Afghanistan, with the introduction of new tools and innovations such as novel oral polio vaccine type 2, backed by the freshly launched polio eradication strategy, delivering on promise 2022 to 2026, there is a fresh sense of optimism. Aidan knows full well the huge investment which Rotary International has made as part of the Global Polio Eradication Initiative. COVID-19 led to a tough year for polio eradication in 2020, he explained, "but we have adapted our strategies and I believe this program has a real opportunity to reboost our efforts in 2021. I have been so impressed by how this program has taken on challenges and continues to innovate, and all of it rooted in its strong partnership. I look forward to working with all partners, including my old organization UNICEF, and of course Rotarians from around the world." Ireland is a country which shares a passion for horses and horse racing, and where the Irish are known for enjoying a flutter or two. Asked what odds he would place on the world becoming wild poliovirus free by 2026, O'Leary admits he is pretty confident. "We will achieve a polio-free world," he added. Information. Read a full interview with Aidan O'Leary, rotarygbi.org/news.
Leprosy. A devastating disease of today. Many people believe that leprosy is just a disease of ancient times, which was occasionally mentioned in the Bible. But the reality for many millions is that it is still a devastating disease of today. St. Francis Leprosy Guild is passionate about finally ending leprosy throughout the world and is offering insightful Zoom talks to Rotary groups about their experiences of working with leprosy-affected people. Over 200,000 people are newly detected with leprosy every year, but this number only includes those who are found and diagnosed. Millions more go undiagnosed, spreading infection within their communities or living with the devastating effects of the disease and consequences. Leprosy is a disease of the nerves, which causes a lack of sensation in peripheral parts of the body, such as the hands and feet. This lack of sensation easily leads to unintentional injury, chronic ulcers, and if left untreated, clawing of hands and feet, amputation, and blindness. Leprosy causes more disability than any other infectious disease. It is also one of the most stigmatized diseases on earth. How often have you heard the word leper used in a derogatory fashion? A leprosy diagnosis is a life sentence for some, often considered a curse from God and the result of sin. Many people with leprosy are thrown out of their homes, communities, or forced to leave their employment, leading to a life of begging. Hundreds of leprosy communities, formerly known as colonies, still exist in remote locations throughout the world, where people, ostracized by leprosy, live out the rest of their lives. However, all is not lost. Leprosy is caused by a bacterium, Mycobacterium leprae, and it can be completely cured by a combination of antibiotics called multidrug therapy, MDT. MDT is readily available throughout the world where the disease is endemic to treat people with leprosy if they can be found and diagnosed. St. Francis Leprosy Guild has cared for people with leprosy for over 125 years, and its current operating strategy emphasizes active case finding and early detection, followed by treatment with MDT. In this way, a lifetime of disability and stigma can be avoided. The charity believes that training, research, active case finding, healthcare, and emergency relief will put an end to leprosy. So for the first time in centuries, an end to leprosy is within sight. St. Francis Leprosy Guild is determined to play its part, and with Rotary's help, we can do it. St. Francis Leprosy Guild would welcome the chance to tell Rotarians more about leprosy and how we are working to put a stop to it. Contact administrator at stfrancisleprosy.org or visit stfrancisleprosy.org.
Reach for the clouds. Mark Esho, who has polio and is a member of Leicester Novus Rotary, describes an initiative which he hopes will give greater access to those with a disability. Mark Esho. We are three disabled people reaching for the stars, but might touch the clouds. Rich Copson, Jig Vaidya and I created our social enterprise, Access Rating, www.accessrating.com, because we are passionate about assisting disabled people in having a voice and improving access to employment and within society itself. According to the Papworth Trust, disabled young people aged 16 to 18 are at least twice as likely as their non-disabled peers to not be in education, employment or training. And 75% of disabled people and their families have walked away from a UK business because of poor accessibility or customer service. We have personal experience of this and know the hospitality sector is losing out on well over £160 million per month from not putting access as a priority for their customers. There was a gap in the market for services that made businesses more disability aware and also provided people who have access needs an easy way to have their say. In February 2020, we launched Access Rating and now have approximately 500 users, over 2,000 venue ratings, and pre-COVID-19, we're completing market research on the access of over 400 venues per week. The charity Scope described our free app as groundbreaking. The app is now on its fourth version. We've expanded the types of venues available to review a year ahead of schedule. Originally, the app focused on the hospitality sector, but now covers all public venues in the UK. Users can review music and sports venues as well as airports and shops. Finding somewhere suitable to eat, drink, shop, and entertain yourself without worrying about access is why this app, the first of its kind, is becoming so popular. Our users review venues as they visit them, and the rating will help and inform others, hopefully eliminating any access anxiety for future visitors. Also, our new search filters offer the ability to view results based on venues accessible for manual wheelchairs, power and electric chairs, mobility scooters, customers who use a walking aid, etc. Users can view where you are on a clear, concise map and see all nearby venues, if geolocation is enabled. Find one you're interested in and use the search bar in the app to see any reviews left for that venue. As well as the app, we carry out access audits to assist businesses. Before lockdown, we had 5 orders in the bag. This is one of the main ways we fund ourselves. We don't want to provide businesses with a problem, we want to offer a solution as well. We have partnered with AccessAble and Purple UK, and on February the 25th next year, we are planning a Leicestershire Access Day. The idea is to create awareness of the services available to disabled people in terms of education, jobs and sport. We will be inviting businesses wishing to offer goods, services and jobs to disabled people. Basically, businesses wishing to tap into the purple pound, which is worth £249 billion each year. So why a social enterprise? My fellow co-founder, Rich Copson, and I have close connections with Ashfield Academy in Leicester, having both been students there. Ashfield is a SEND school, specialising in educating and supporting children with special educational needs and disabilities. We used our savings to help launch our company. I cannot be prouder of what my friends and I have achieved. We plan to expand the range of disabilities in our app and have started work on version 5. Access rating may have put a big dent in our savings, but we would not have it any other way. We have a chance to make a positive impact on how disabled people live their lives. How can you help? You do not have to be disabled to use the app. Download the app onto your Apple or Android phone, search for Access Rating, and start rating places you have visited in the past and your local venues. Help us change disabled access one review at a time. We have never been closer to eradicating polio. Mike McGovern, Rotary International Polio Plus Committee Chair. As the sun rose on January the 1st, 2021, we all worried about what this new year would bring. For those of us who closely follow polio eradication progress, it was an especially worrisome time. Both 2019 and 2020 had seen an uptick in wild poliovirus cases and in circulating vaccine-derived cases. Polio vaccinations had had to be suspended for a while in 2020 due to the coronavirus and vaccines for COVID-19 just starting to receive early use approvals. The polio news was especially bad in Afghanistan. On the very first day of 2021, a wild poliovirus case was reported. In the next week, the National Health Minister was fired due to hints of corruption on non-polio matters. Before month's end, the Afghanistan government ordered the UNICEF polio lead to leave the country, relating to a verbal spat that had occurred in the president's office. Then, in March and June, there were coordinated attacks on polio workers and their security teams, leaving 8 families having lost loved ones. The Taliban denied responsibility for the attacks, and it appeared the attacks were tied to elements who supported ISIS, or ISIL as they are also known. We also noted that some areas of the country had been subject to over 30 months of a ban on house-to-house polio vaccinations. While all this was going on, other activities were occurring which have been mostly unreported. On January the 17th, the regional directors of WHO and UNICEF met at the Taliban office in Doha, Qatar, to discuss polio vaccinations and COVID response in the areas controlled by the Taliban. While house-to-house polio vaccinations were not agreed to, the 7 senior members of Taliban leadership indicated support for other measures to provide vaccination activities. In all areas of the country, health screenings continued unabated, which showed no new wild polio cases and no positive identification of polioviruses in the environment. In a Zoom call of polio partnership leaders the week of August the 17th, Aidan O'Leary, the global WHO polio eradication director, noted that Afghanistan has one of the best programs for polio surveillance in the world, and it was not finding polio anywhere. After the fall of the Afghanistan government in mid-August, the new leadership has agreed to keep on the acting health minister, who has been effective in writing the program since February. Taliban leaders have visited the national and regional polio offices and pledged their support for the polio eradication program. On August the 23rd, a Rotary-sponsored roadside vaccination hut provided vaccinations to children under five, with local Taliban providing the needed security. For security reasons, I will not share the photos I received, but it was good to see the Rotary logo doing good in the world. Rotary has just 35 members in Afghanistan. They inspire me daily with their courage and perseverance. The polio program has always been politically neutral in every country. Rotary and our partners work with the leaders who are in charge. We now work with new leaders in Afghanistan. Rotary funds WHO and UNICEF. We do not send any funds to the governments nor to groups other than WHO and UNICEF. We monitor the spending they do on our behalf very closely. We have never been closer to eradicating polio in Afghanistan. We will continue to work with the Afghani people and our partners to finish what we began over 35 years ago.
Rotary gets on board. Over the past year, Rotary Heart of England District 1060 has supported the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust. In July, young people treated at hospitals across the district enjoyed the benefit of that Rotary support as the Trust welcomed them for sailing and outdoor adventure days. Carenza Mortem. It's good to know that there are other people that had the same as me, and I'm not the only one. Not the only one. Four words the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust hears so often. Lily is only nine, but she has lived with the effects of childhood cancer since being diagnosed with bilateral retinoblastoma, tumours in both eyes, at 17 months. Lily is blind in her right eye, and as she's gotten older, she has become more aware of what she has lived through. It has caused her anxiety. She didn't know anyone else like her, until the day she spent with the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust sailing, canoeing and taking on the high ropes at Whitemoor Lakes Activity Centre in Lichfield, Staffordshire. It lifted her. At bedtime, I would feel upset I hadn't ever met anybody that had the same as me before, and now I feel really good. I don't know why, that just helps me. It made me feel not lonely, like I've got some people behind my back. It makes you feel you're not the only one. Those four words again. When a young person gets the all clear from cancer, it's an ecstatic time for families. But for so many young people, picking up from where they left off before their diagnosis isn't possible. Cancer in young people can lead to poor mental health and emotional well-being, lower educational achievement, barriers to getting a job, body image issues, relationship difficulties, and ongoing late effects. This all comes at a time of rapid physical, emotional, and social development. The normal they once knew no longer exists. The pandemic has amplified the loneliness, isolation, and anxiety they and their families experience to unimaginable levels. This is where the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust comes in, inspiring young people aged 8 to 24 to believe in a brighter future living through and beyond cancer. Through sailing and outdoor adventure, young people meet others who have had similar experiences, often for the first time, rediscover independence, feel an increased sense of purpose and self-worth, and realise what they are capable of again, physically, mentally and socially. Most importantly, they stop feeling like the only one. They feel accepted, optimistic and independent, and can start to re-establish their place in the world. Rotary Heart of England, past district governor, Tim Bushell, was inspired to nominate the Trust as his charity of the year after meeting Dr. Dave Hobin, a consultant paediatric oncologist at Birmingham Children's Hospital and the Trust's medical advisor, and hearing about the impact the Trust has on so many young people from across his district. Against the backdrop of COVID, the district raised almost £7,500 to help give Lily and many others like her the chance to believe in a brighter future. In total, 15 young people from across the district enjoyed one of 4 days with the Trust at Whitemoor Lakes. They were amongst 340 young people the Trust has welcomed on trips throughout the UK in 2021. Julie Gonzalez is a Teenage Cancer Trust Youth Support Coordinator at Birmingham Children's Hospital and a trust volunteer. She said, "Going through cancer treatment over the past 18 months has been so isolating, even more than usual. Young people absolutely needed this to come out of isolation. Anxiety levels in young people are absolutely huge at the moment too. We saw quite a demand for the trips, not just from the parents, but from young people wanting to do it too. It's some sort of sense of normality for them, being able to push themselves a little bit and to get back out there. It's the small steps, and I'm so glad the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust is doing it. Many young people need continued support over time. Having enjoyed a taste of the trust on their doorsteps this summer, all the young people will be invited on a 4-day yacht sailing adventure next year and can then stay involved year on year for as long as they need. In the future, some will also be invited to become volunteers to support other young people like them. Meeting adults who have had cancer themselves is very powerful and aspirational for someone more recently off treatment." Dame Ellen concludes, "We find a huge transformation in many young people the first time they're supported by the trust. There's an amazing atmosphere on the trips. At the start, it's often the first time a young person has been away from their parents since treatment. It's a big step for them and their parents. They're often quiet and not sure what to expect. At the end of the trip, you wouldn't recognise them. We get parents say to us, 'Thank you for giving us our son or daughter back,' because it has a profound effect. Thank you, Rotary. We really appreciate your time and support for these young people." Fact file. Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust. Dame Ellen MacArthur founded the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust in 2003 after sailing with A Chacun Son Cap, a French charity for children with cancer and leukemia, in 2000, and being inspired by the incredible impact sailing had on them. Since 2003, the Trust has supported almost 2,700 young people living through and beyond cancer. The Trust was launched in Cowes, Isle of Wight, and in 2013 opened a second base in Largs on Scotland's west coast to support more young people across Scotland, the north of England and Northern Ireland. The Trust also runs canal trips for young people who are wheelchair users, need more one-to-one support or are anxious about their mobility. The Trust supports brothers and sisters too, as they can be significantly impacted by the long-term illness of a sibling. To find out more or to discuss making the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust your charity of the year, visit ellenmacarthurcancertrust.org or email fundraising@emcancertrust.org.
Giving hope to humanity. Just before lockdown in January 2020, Manoj Joshi led a group of Rotarians to Amritsar in northern India to assist medical teams during polio immunizations. The retired pharmacist from Bradford reflects on why polio must remain a key goal for all Rotarians. "End Polio Now is a cause I've supported throughout my life, firstly as an Interact member in Uganda and then as a Rotarian for almost 40 years in Yorkshire. I even remember having the polio vaccination on a sugar cube as a child in Ginger. To rid the world of a life-threatening and crippling disease within our lifetime is a monumental accomplishment for humanity. This is the whole point of Rotary, and I take personal pride in the accomplishments of our organisation as a whole. It was a huge honour to serve as District Governor of Yorkshire and North Lincolnshire for Rotary International 2019 to 2020. I was resolute about raising the status and profile of the amazing work of Rotarians in the community at large and made a point of saying yes to every invitation and opportunity to participate in anything Rotary related with my family. I kicked off the year by unveiling my Mercedes branded with Rotary and hashtag End Polio Now signage at the handover dinner, which was attended by 350 guests. I also commissioned 300 blue custom shawls with the theme of the year Rotary Connects the World to honour all of the club's presidents in the district, as well as other long-serving and visiting Rotarians in a meaningful way. To commemorate World Polio Day on October the 24th, 2017, I organised for the city centre of Bradford to be draped in purple lights, and it since has become an annual activity. In 2020, landmarks all over the district, in Bradford, Halifax, Knaresborough, Wetherby, Louth and Brigg, were lit up purple, as well as other parts of the UK, and even Table Mountain in South Africa. My wish is for purple lights to adorn monuments all over the world as beacons of hope for humanity. In order to engage the South Asian community in the campaign, I approached my good friend Eunice Chowdhury, the founder of Regal Foods PLC, one of the UK's top 10 food and confectionery bakery businesses based in Bradford. My vision was to create a uniquely branded hashtag Purple for Polio Madeira cake, which was sold in shops nationwide for the month of October. In January 2020, just before the global lockdown to curb the COVID-19 pandemic, I had the honour of leading a delegation of British Rotarians to India, along with my wife Bhavna and daughter Megha, to assist immunisation teams and Rotarians for the National Immunisation Day in Amritsar. Amritsar lies close to Pakistan, where the virus still remains, even though India has been polio-free since 2014. Rotarians from the Rotary Club of Amritsar oversaw our activities and proudly showed us all of their brilliant initiatives to alleviate poverty. We will never forget their friendship. All it takes is one determined individual to create a huge impact. Rotarians in the UK raise vast sums of money in the fight to eradicate polio, and we were able to see for ourselves how that hard-earned money was being used. In fact, when I joined the Rotary Club of Bradford in 1983, our club raised the most funds in the district. I felt blessed to have the opportunity to immunise children, protecting them for life, and personally administered the vaccine to around 80 children. To commemorate World Polio Day last year and raise maximum awareness and funds for the cause whilst having fun, my daughter Megha suggested dyeing my giant overgrown lockdown beard and trademark moustache of 52 years bright purple and then shaving everything off, including my ponytail. We did the shedding in the open air in front of City Hall in Bradford. It was even streamed live on Facebook. To my delight, over £21,000 was raised. For the first time ever, my wife and children and everyone saw me without my trademark tash. I felt so exposed, even on Zoom. However, it felt amazing to do something so personal for the benefit of others, and now over 105,000 children will be immunised from this crippling disease for life. In 1972, my family and many others had to flee Uganda as a result of the dictator Idi Amin's expulsion of the Asian minorities. That's how we arrived in England, as refugees. Seeing the current humanitarian crisis of the Afghani people trying to escape Taliban rule brings back those memories of despair and desperation. As a refugee, I know what it is like not to have, but the act of service and giving has enriched me with abundance in so many ways. Therefore, it is imperative that as Rotarians, we do not forget our supreme principle of service above self, which has been universally accepted for 116 years. No other organisation in the history of humanity has given aid regardless of politics, ethnicity or religion. We must not leave anyone behind, especially minorities, women and children. As we approach World Polio Day on October the 24th, I urge non-Rotarians to engage with us so we can continue to alleviate suffering in critical areas and eradicate polio, all while imparting hope for humanity. Foundation giving. What's in it for me? The Rotary Foundation is Rotary's charity whose money transforms lives with service projects which eradicate polio, promote peace, and improve developing communities. One key area of funding is legacy giving. Ian Priestley and Mike Hodge. A curious headline for the article, so let's put it another way. If I give money to the Rotary Foundation, TRF, what will it be used for, and how will I and others benefit from it? First of all, let's explode a myth about giving. A few months ago, a district leader told me that individuals were not allowed to make financial contributions to the foundation. They were adamant that donations could only be given by clubs. Worryingly, this is not the first time I've heard this view expressed. Whilst many Rotarians do contribute via their clubs, it is certainly not the case that individuals cannot contribute directly. In fact, the contrary is true. Individuals are encouraged to make financial contributions directly to TRF, ideally via the Rotary Foundation UK to get gift aid where applicable, with credit given to the members' club as well. However, currently less than 15% of Rotarians in Great Britain and Ireland donate money directly to TRF, which can be identified as a personal contribution. So why do people give money to TRF? Over the past couple of years, as endowment major gift advisors covering Great Britain and Ireland, we have had confidential discussions with many Rotarians and some non-Rotarians about what motivates giving to TRF. Although the awarding of a pin plus a mention at a district or national event is for some a nice way of being recognised because it also gives them an opportunity to encourage others to give, this is not for everyone. The overwhelming response is that it's not for the recognition, but to give others who are less fortunate an opportunity which can be leveraged by the support of our own charity. What other charity gives you the opportunity to state what the money will be spent on? With the seven areas of focus, it is highly unlikely you couldn't find a cause which you aren't passionate about. Over the past 4 years, TRF has given in excess of 500 grants with contributions from the World Fund of around $10 million. Even when the world was so severely restricted by the impact of COVID-19, these grants continued, in addition to delivering around $870,000 in district grants. Put another way, more than $10 million worth of projects have benefited from a financial contribution from the foundation. In Great Britain and Ireland, the total amount donated to the annual fund in the last Rotary year was $2.38 million. That means in 3 years' time that this money will come back as district-designated funds, or Rotary funds managed by the district, worth around $1.2 million. It is clear that if donations amount to less than the outgoings, then the funding model is unsustainable, which won't be able to financially support projects in the way which we have traditionally been used to. Last October, Rotary magazine published an article when a number of current donors told us why they gave financial support to the Rotary Foundation. This obviously struck a chord with readers, since this resulted in donations or pledges to TRF in excess of $5 million. District Governor Nick Gidney and his wife Sue from District 1180, which covers North and Mid Wales, Merseyside, the Wirral and parts of Cheshire, Shropshire and Lancashire, saw the article. The feature prompted them to do something positive for TRF, but why did they do it? Nick explained, "As Rotarians, we have a moral duty to lead by example and use what we have built up in our estates to be of help to others. That sentiment is deep-rooted in our Rotary values and service above self principles. Our legacy to the Foundation will provide a lasting income stream to support the immeasurably valuable work of future generations of Rotarians. The knowledge that we're helping others is both empowering and fulfilling." Nick and Sue were given the opportunity to direct their legacy to one of Rotary's seven areas of focus. However, their response was, "When the legacy is realised, we don't know where the greatest need will be, so we would like the trustees of TRF to decide where the money can be best used." So reverting back to the original question, what's in it for me, everyone's reasons for giving are motivated by different things. But by giving to TRF, you know that your donations and legacies are being used to continue the work which you as a Rotarian so clearly value. If you want to know more about how you can make a personal donation or leave a legacy to the Rotary Foundation, speak in confidence to the Endowment and Major Gifts Advisors, Mike Hodge at michael.hodge@ntlworld.com, or Ian Priestley at pdgianpriestley@gmail.com. That's pdgianpriestley@gmail.com. Gift Aid It. Make use of Gift Aid. Gift Aid, a way to make your personal donation stretch that little bit further at no extra cost. How? The answer to that lies in the unique tax incentive offered by the UK government called Gift Aid, which can add 25p for every £1 donation. As a UK taxpayer, all you need to do is complete a declaration in support of the charity, and the charity will do the rest. Rotary Foundation of the United Kingdom, RFUK's Gift Aid declaration form is available online at rotarygbi.org/gift-aid-form. Over the last three financial years, a total of £307,020 gift aid has been received from Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs. However, if all the individual contributions qualified for gift aid, the amount receivable from HMRC would have been £400,122. That is an extra £92,102. If you're wondering why RFUK is not receiving that extra refunding, there are a number of reasons. Some individuals are unable to participate in the scheme, i.e. non-UK taxpayers, those paying insufficient tax, etc. Clubs ask their members to support their own charitable trust and claim gift aid directly. In these cases, the trust should ensure they remit the donation and relevant gift aid amount to RFUK. Some individuals have never heard of the scheme and thus not completed a declaration. We recommend you take a look at your personal giving record through My Rotary. If you know you are donating but can't see those donations, then it is likely that you have asked RFUK to credit your club with your contributions. This can easily be changed by contacting rfuk@rotarygbi.org. The longest-running Rotary project in the world. High up in the beautiful Peak District is the Rotary Centre, which has been providing holidays for youngsters for over 100 years. Dave King. Right in the heart of the Peak District in Derbyshire, you will find what is believed to be the longest-running Rotary project in the world. In 1920, members of the newly formed Rotary Club of Sheffield decided to take a group of boys whose fathers had been killed during the First World War away for a week-long holiday to the seaside at Bridlington. The following year, a camp was held at Derwent, and the Rotary Club then set up base at Shatton in Derbyshire, which was opened in 1923 and served as a venue for the next 13 years. It was at Shatton that Sister Edith, the warden of Croft House in Sheffield, brought her underprivileged women and children from Garden Street and the Crofts area of the city, then a desperately poor district. At Shatton, a hut provided by the club to Sheffield's only Victoria Cross holder, Sergeant Arnold Loosemore, which had been used by his family after the Great War, was handed back to the Rotary Club following his death to be used as a camp office and kitchen. Today, the Rotary Centre is based at Castleton, a village situated 18 miles from Sheffield and 25 miles from Manchester, a quiet rural setting right on the doorstep of rolling hills, dramatic rock edges beside wild moorlands. In 1935, the land was purchased in Castleton to provide a permanent base for these holidays, which have continued right up until today. This building, which was once a home for war hero Sergeant Loosemore, was moved to Castleton and is still being used today. Sheffield Rotary now runs three separate weeks featuring up to 30 children each week, aged between 8 and 12 years old, who have been recommended as deserving a residential activity holiday because of their home circumstances. Rotarian Jeremy Holmes, a past president of Sheffield Rotary, serves as the volunteer centre manager, with wife Melanie as chair of the Children's Camp Committee, which runs the actual camps. "Not many Rotarians know that the Rotary Centre Castleton exists," he said. "I think we're quite unique in owning a place like this, and also for running the disadvantaged children's holidays and camps for nearly 100 years. One of the earliest pioneers was Bob Stokes, who, in between the war years and on his own initiative, found employment for more than 1,500 boys who had passed through the camp and reached the school leaving age of 14. During the Second World War, camps were not run by the Rotary Club because of a shortage of help, but Castleton was used to house homeless families who were supported by the Rotarians. In 1945, the Castleton camp was opened, with Rotarians Leonard Horner, Keith Patterson and Harry Mottershaw organising rations, permits and food coupons to get the camp back in business. Internationally, a lot of work was done to foster better relations in Europe after the war, with Harold Mather organising the annual Castleton International Camp, which ran from 1951 to 2001. Today, the Rotary Centre is hired out all the year round to groups such as the Scouts, Girl Guides, schools, church youth groups, walking groups and families. The income generated pays for the running costs as well as the disadvantaged children's holidays, which Sheffield Rotary hosts each year. COVID put paid to the Rotary Centre's centenary celebrations when they had to close in March 2020. Fortunately, they had sufficient reserves to stay afloat, along with a couple of government grants. Jeremy added, 2020 would have been 100 years of the centre and the children's camps, and we had planned a celebration for this. We've decided not to run the camps this year, so we're moving the 100th celebration to the summer of 2022. In the meantime, we're looking at having an extension to one of the buildings to upgrade the showers and toilets. The Rotary Centre has been able to host other groups this summer, with bookings flooding in thick and fast right up until the end of December next year and even 2023. Information: rotarycentrecastleton.co.uk. Bookings at rotarycentrecastleton.co.uk.
WPV versus CVDPV, what's the difference? Wild poliovirus, WPV, is the most commonly known form of the poliovirus. However, there is another form of polio that can spread within communities, circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus, or EVDPV. While EVDPVs are rare, they have been increasing in recent years due to low immunisation rates within communities. EVDPV type 2, EVDPV2, close brackets, are the most prevalent, with 959 cases occurring globally in 2020. Notably, since the African region was declared to have interrupted transmission of the wild polio virus in August 2020, EVDPV are now the only form of the polio virus that affects the African region. How do EVDPVs occur? The oral polio vaccine, OPV, that has brought the wild polio virus to the brink of eradication has many benefits. The live, attenuated, weakened vaccine virus provides better immunity in the gut, which is where the polio replicates. The vaccine virus is also excreted in the stool, and in communities with low quality sanitation, this means that it can be spread from person to person and actually help protect the community. However, in communities with low immunisation rates, as the virus is spread from one unvaccinated child to another over a long period of time, often over the course of about 12 to 18 months, it can mutate and take on a form that can cause paralysis, just like the wild polio virus. The mutated polio virus can then spread in communities, leading to EVDPVs. How is the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, GPEI, working to stop EVDPVs? The cause of EVDPV is low immunisation rates, so the best way to prevent them and stop them when there is an outbreak is to vaccinate children. The polio vaccine protects children whether the kind of polio is wild poliovirus or vaccine-derived poliovirus. Outbreaks, whether WPV or EVDPV, are usually rapidly stopped with two or three rounds of high-quality immunisation campaigns. In addition to high-quality immunisation campaigns, the GPEI is working to deploy an improved outbreak response tool, the novel oral polio vaccine type 2, or NOPV2. This vaccine is similar to MOPV2, the monovalent oral polio vaccine type 2, the current outbreak response vaccine that is used when EVDPV type 2 outbreaks occur. However, it contains improvements that help make the vaccine virus less likely to mutate and cause disease in communities with low immunization rates, meaning that it can help reduce the risk of EVDPV2 outbreaks. What are the other vaccine-derived polioviruses? While EVDPVs affect communities and warrant public health action, given the public health threat that they pose, there are other kinds of vaccine-derived polioviruses, VDPV, that are found in individuals and the environment. Tell me about immunodeficiency-related vaccine-derived poliovirus, IVDPV. Prolonged replication of VDPVs has been observed in a small number of people with rare immune deficiency disorders. Because they're not able to mount an immune response, these people are not able to clear the intestinal vaccine virus infection, which is usually cleared within 6 to 8 weeks. They therefore excrete IVDPVs for prolonged periods. The occurrence of IVDPVs is very rare. Only 111 cases have been documented worldwide since 1962. Of these, most stopped excretion within 6 months or died. What about ambiguous vaccine-derived polioviruses, AVDPV? When a vaccine-derived poliovirus is found in an individual that is not immunocompromised, i.e. it is not an IVDPV, and it is confirmed that this VDPV is not circulating within a community, i.e. it is not an EVDPV, then this case is referred to as a VDPV. Information. Source: Global Polio Eradication Initiative, polioeradication.org. making a difference in Malawi. Retired couple Sue and Tony Melia from Rugby visited Malawi in 2005 on a volunteering trip to teach in a school. This followed a chance conversation between their daughter and a work colleague from the Bwengo area of northern Malawi. Malawi is one of the poorest countries in the world. 1 in 10 adults live with HIV/AIDS, and 1 million children from a population of 19 million have been orphaned by the disease. With 53% of the population of Malawi below the age of 18 years, the couple set off for Africa with high hopes 16 years ago, little realizing how the next few weeks would change theirs and their family's lives forever. They were shocked by the poor classroom facilities, with just one book to teach from, so returned home to fundraise and address some of the problems. For the next 13 years, Sue and Tony returned to Malawi regularly. The schools, which were in very poor state, started to be renovated. The couple bought building materials and supplies, as the local community provided a workforce. Over the years, thanks to the couple's efforts, more than 26 schools were renovated, decorated, supplied with furniture, and provided with textbooks. The link between the lack of toilet facilities at schools and poor attendance, particularly senior girls, was recognised, so the projects expanded to include the building of toilets. They also started a feeding programme for the many orphans and disadvantaged children, buying maize locally to help their economy. From the beginning, a number of Rotary clubs were supportive, among them Coventry Rotary. But the overwhelming problem remains. How do you teach so many children, who are so eager to learn, with little or no resources? Through Sue and Tony's daughter Samantha and her husband Rob, they developed an idea to use modern technology in the classrooms. Previously, a typical lesson in a Malawi classroom consisted of a teacher writing the lesson onto a poorly maintained blackboard with a class size of up to 150 children and perhaps one or two textbooks available for the whole class. Rob developed a prototype kit consisting of an LED projector and Android tablet with speakers powered by a car battery and charged with a solar panel. The whole class teaching kit was born. These kits have been used in 9 villages, teaching more than 1,000 adults. They've also reached 19 schools, with more than 15,000 children benefiting. Rotary clubs have funded a number of these kits. The introduction of the whole class teaching kits has gone hand in hand with a continued programme of school renovations. In fact, since 2005, 288 projects have been completed, 98 sponsored by 19 Rotary clubs. The whole class teaching kit is a simple idea that can transform all manner of learning in any under-resourced country or environment. Information, bwenguprojectsmalawi.org.
It pays to get corporate. Colin Winston. The focus on growing membership is constantly being highlighted. Let's not forget why Rotary was formed by Paul Harris in 1905, with business leaders wishing to maximise business opportunities while actively contributing to the well-being of their community. Today we seem to shy away from talking business. Corporate membership has been available for many years, yet clubs seem reluctant to consider it as part of their membership drive. I regularly hear members saying, "We're no longer in business, we don't know the terminology or understand current business requirements." Clubs do not feel confident talking to business leaders about corporate social responsibility, CSR, or maximising their networking opportunities. So how can we address this? Recently, I met with a club interested in acquiring new members but unable to engage with the business sector. The first question I asked was, who has children employed locally? Immediately, the proud members started discussing their family experiences. We compiled a list of companies where they could ask their children to find if a CSR plan exists, who is responsible, how charities are chosen, and what budgets are allocated. The list was distilled to 8 target companies, and within 2 weeks they had 2 new corporate members from a hotel and printers. So why would companies want to join Rotary? We have concentrated on the CSR angle for some time now, and with the difficulties during COVID, many companies are rebuilding their businesses with new staff and fresh ways of working. So what has Rotary got to offer corporate members? We should think of it as business membership, the potential to increase company performance by networking locally and globally. Previously, many Rotarians had their membership fees paid by their firms. Companies knew their staff were being recognised in their community as trustworthy, organised, proactive, having a social conscience, and most of all, available for new business conversations. When companies consider their employees' personal development plans, the focus is what can the staff member offer in the local community? How can they get their hands dirty with a local project which raises the business profile and builds teamwork? Many firms would prefer this approach under the guidance of Rotary, as opposed to simply fundraising, although the two often go together. So who should we target as a corporate member? All businesses are trying to increase their interaction with potential customers. In the West Midlands, we have a range of companies as corporate members. Care homes, hotels, football clubs, solicitors, restaurants, academies, and even a racecourse. What they have in common is that they are all in competition in some way or another. The need for differentiation from their competitors results in a more professional profile with increased business conversations. For Rotary, corporate members bring new life to our clubs. They will probably be younger, more willing to get engaged, whose businesses will have budgets for CSR and personal development. This fresh blood can introduce new and topical project ideas, add diversity, and inject renewed enthusiasm. Rotary is a membership organisation. New members increase income and expand opportunities to make a difference for citizens locally and throughout the world. So next time you meet at a golf day, business expo, school careers event, networking club, or accept a hospitality invite, consider how Rotary could help others to increase their business performance. Colin Winston is the immediate past chair of public image for District 1060, Heart of England, and president of Rotary in Knowle and Dorridge in Warwickshire. No living in a box with polio. John Elford Box from Rotherham Rotary in South Yorkshire is a polio ambassador. To mark World Polio Day on October the 24th, this is his story of how he refused to allow the condition to limit his ambition. I was born on February the 5th, 1946, living in Maltby, a mining community 6 miles from Rotherham in South Yorkshire. My mother was Irish and my father English. In August 1948, on a family holiday on the east coast of Yorkshire, I contracted polio. This was just 6 weeks after the NHS was created on July the 5th. For the best part of the next 5 years, I spent time at a hospital in Sheffield where visiting was just once a fortnight. There were occasional visits home. I was positioned on a plaster cast for 18 months, which ran down my back and along my legs. Medical expertise 70 years ago in dealing with polio and its consequences was antiquated. Throughout my life, mostly in my younger days, I endured a variety of medical procedures which would now be seen as ineffective and mostly to no avail. However, aged 54, I had my right rotator cuff repaired. It was a tremendous success. The effects of contracting polio made a big impact on my life to the extent that my memory of life begins at 11 years old. Moving through my teens, I always desired that my situation would improve, but it was a dream. In my post-teen years, I often thought, as all young men do, about the opposite sex and what sort of life I would have. Those thoughts were inevitably always negative. However, on April the 26th, 1969, I married Gloria, my wife now of 52 years. I was born into a family of bricklayers. Given what that disease did to me, there was no possibility of becoming a bricklayer. What life did afford me was an active brain, which I used to graduate with a degree in construction and design, and later, aged 54, with a degree in law. I still work today as an architectural and planning consultant with my business partner of 21 years in an architectural practice I started 47 years ago, and I see no reason why this can't continue. What that disease did to me will never ever dampen my intention to live life to the full or reduce my involvement in Rotary. I give talks on my life living with polio to Rotary clubs all over the world. I have never allowed what this disease inflicted on me to prevent me from succeeding in life. In the limited years I have left, that will never alter. My mobility slowly decreases, but my enthusiasm to move on never wanes. Information: John Elford Box, jebox@btconnect.com. That's jebox@btconnect.com.
Editor's letter. And finally, from Managing Editor Dave King. In Welsh, Bryn Mawr means big hill. Now, this market town at the head of the South Wales Valleys lies 1,345 feet above sea level. Bryn Mawr Rotary reckons theirs is the highest Rotary club in the UK. It's a club with high ideals and values whose levels of community work is truly astonishing. I spent the weekend in Bryn Mawr recently, accompanied by two Rotary scholars, Bandana Adhikari from Nepal and Faith Ndungi from Kenya, who are studying at Brunel and Reading Universities and hosted by Elthorne Hillingdon and Reading Matins Rotary Clubs in Middlesex and Berkshire. Rotary in the Thames Valley, that's District 1090, has been supporting Rotary scholars since 1949 to its five universities, including Oxford University, and which is funded through the Rotary Foundation. District Governor Karen Eveley joined the scholars on the South Wales trip. Roughly £87.5 million is distributed in Rotary scholarships each year, with clubs applying to the Rotary Foundation for district and global grants to support scholarships. These global grants are for graduate students studying abroad in one of Rotary's seven causes. Bandana, for example, is completing her master's in the anthropology of childhood, youth and education. She wants to train teachers in Nepal and, one day, set up her own school. The reason for the Welsh connection is that Bryn Mawr Rotary is the international sponsor for Bandana's Rotary Scholarship. So it was important for Bandana and Faith to witness the true impact of Rotary in the Valleys. There you will discover rock-solid community Rotary with no room for vanity, egos or unnecessary gloss. Bryn Mawr Rotary, led by 30-year-old Erin Teague in her second year as president, punches well above its weight. Rotary-branded roundabout planters welcome you as you enter the town. During COVID, the club created a supplementary food bank called Together We Are Stronger, delivering food parcels and medication to the vulnerable and isolated. It also works closely with schools, providing dictionaries, while also providing groups in the areas with small grants. We visited Nantyglo Football Club, where the Rotary Club not only sponsors shirts, but has been working with younger football players, as well as its Interact and Rota Kids, to design a mural which will be sited at the club. Working with a local artist, Shanti Ray, also of Nepalese descent, the school holiday project captures the images and memories of COVID for these community youngsters. Now, throw in Bryn Mawr's Life Straws initiative, which makes contaminated water safe to drink, plus the club's support of many international projects such as Jaipur Lim, and it shows how a little goes a long way. Bryn Mawr Rotary is a super club. It is how Rotary should be, and if you're looking for a marker for your own club, then look no further than South Wales. They're innovative, they're dynamic and selfless in their drive to improve their community and, quite simply, brilliant Rotarians. Recently, on another club visit, I was taken to task by someone who said we should sometimes show more of the fun of Rotary. Well, rest assured, Bryn Mawr Rotary has fun in spades with their awe-inspiring work and a ready smile on their faces. Well, that's all from us for the October-November issue of Rotary Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it, and do let us know what you think of this audio edition. You can email me at editor@rotarygbi.org. That's editor@rotarygbi.org. The Rotary Magazine has been presented by Dave King, the Rotary Magazine editor, and a team of professional narrators. All items in its audio are copyright and owned by Rotary International, Great Britain and Ireland. A downloadable edition of this audio, for the visually impaired members can be requested. The audio magazine is also available to download or stream by visiting Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland website, which is rotarygbi.org/magazine. That's rotarygbi.org/magazine. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us for the next audio edition. That's the December-January issue, which will have a strong focus on climate change, bearing in mind the important United Nations climate change talks, which are being held in Glasgow in November, known as COP26. Now, Rotary will have a seat at the conference, and we will be reflecting in the next issue about what role Rotary and Rotarians can have in saving the planet. So until next time, goodbye for now, and thank you for listening.